Alright, we're starting here with the two dots on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing the end of the Mishnah, which is that if you have years by which there is no productivity for the field, then they don't count towards the minimum 2 years that he's allowed to keep them before the seller has the right to redeem it from him. And again, we noted yesterday, the Gemara in Bava Metzia makes it clear that it has to be an event that affects the entire area, the entire nation, not something that's his field alone or something in his particular region. It has to be something much bigger than that, which is completely out of his control and not his mazel. And that's when you get the deduction of that year as if it wasn't there. But we said that in years where he either leaves it fallow or he plows it and leaves it fallow, those years count because that was his choice to leave it fallow. And he lost the productivity even though the field could have produced during that period of time. Like Mark says, Hashto vira olalo. When you say that if he left it completely fallow, it counts towards his 2 years, Neira Mibai, then when he plows it and then leaves it fallow, what's the question? Of course, that should count because there he did more. Or says, no, Neira Itztrichle. When he plows it, I would have thought otherwise. Sagadat Chamina Amrinanle Havle Dame Thalesik. Tell him, give him the money, pay for it, and then take it back. Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. What the Gemara here is making a veiled reference to, which the Rabbeinu Gershom already notes here, is that Kevan Shetarachba, since he worked the field, Shinira Vishbicha, that he plowed it and he upgraded it, Velo Nehne Mimeno, but he got zero benefit from that, or he's not getting anything from it. Havle Lokeach Dmei Krave. The Lokeach should have to pay for the plowing, Shecharsha Vishbicha, that he plowed and he improved the land. So, for instance, in a situation in which a person, during the period of time that he buys this land and has it through to the Yovel, if he puts improvements into the land, and now the land is worth more when it goes back in the Yovel, then the original owner has to pay him for that improvement in the land. He doesn't get that for free. It doesn't go back to him for nothing. So that it makes sense because you want to incentivize the person that's working the field not just to wreck the field and ruin it so that when he hands it back in the Yovel, he doesn't care what it looks like. You want him to upgrade it. You want it to be productive. You want him to use it in a proper manner. So the way that you do that is you have him invest in the land. If he invests in the land, he'll get a repayment or he'll get a return on that. If it improves the output, he'll get paid for that. The owner of the land will compensate him for the improvements that he puts into the land. So that's despite the fact that in the Yovel, the property is going to leave him. He doesn't get to keep the property in the Yovel despite what he invested. And he gets paid for that which he invested. So the assumption here would be maybe it should be the same thing. When you plow the field, you've upgraded the field, but you're not getting the benefit from it. So since you are upgrading the field and not getting the benefit of it, maybe the buyer should have to compensate you for that. So that's what we say, Kamash Mulan, that we don't say that over here. That's true by the Yovel. That's true when you're looking at a bigger picture. But over a 2 year period, if he's just going to plow the field 1 year and not use it at all, he can't come and make a claim for improvements in the field and then ask you to pay for that improvement because he plowed it and left it fallow. So that's the Hava Mina. The Hava Mina would have been, you should compensate him for it. Kamash Malan, that's what the Mishnah tells us, that you don't have to compensate in that case. It counts as his year. It was one of his productive years. He chose not to plant. That's his choice. That was his decision. And he can't then make a claim that he improved the land and wants to get compensated for it. Now, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Macharalo, so then we have Rabbi Lezer at the end of the Mishnah, which says that if you sell it before Rosh Hashanah, you can end up having three tvuot. You can have three harvests. Tanya Rabbi Lezer Omer, minayin shimachra lo lifnei Rosh Hashanah mle apri rot. How do we know that if he was sold it before Rosh Hashanah, when it was loaded, meaning that the harvest was ready to go, shalo yomar lo, anech lefanai kederach shanachti lefanecha, that the seller can't say to the buyer, just like I gave you a fully loaded field, and it was ready to be harvested, 2 years from now, you better hand me a field back that looks the same way and is ready to be harvested. That he doesn't have a right to do. The individual can harvest what he bought, and then he can harvest again in the end of the 2 years. He gets the full 2 years. Whatever is produced during those 2 years, he can do as he pleases with. Then he can't have, there's no demand that he return it full like he got it. Because Talmud Lomar, because the Pasuk says, B'mispar shnei tvuot im karlach. Because the Pasuk says with regards to the Yovel that b'mispar shanim achrei Yovel tiknem et amitecha mispar shnei tvuot yimkar lach. That's the Pasuk that we've been quoting all along for, we quoted before for the sorts of Rabbi Lezer's opinion. That is Pamim Shadam Ochel Shalosh Tvuot Mishtei Shanim. Turns out that that will make it work that sometimes the people eat Shalosh Tvuot, three harvests, over a period of 2 years. Because, as Rashi says, Bemispar Shnei Tvuot means that Kol Tvuot Shebishtei Shanim. Any number of Tvuot that are manifest over the Shnei, over the 2 years, that you're entitled to. And that could be even three. That could be more than two. The only governing principle of here is the number of years, not the number of harvests. Because it could have written Mispar, either Mispar Shanim, or it could have written Mispar Tvuot. That would have meant two Tvuot. But the fact that it wrote Mispar Shnei Tvuot makes it sound like that the Tvuot are not as relevant as the governing years. That's how Rashi explains it over here. So the fact that the Torah wrote it in this convoluted way is come to teach you this din, that it's 2 years no matter how many Tvuot are harvested. All right, next Mishnah. Machrad Rishon Bemanet. He sold it to the first party for 100 zuz. Machar Rishon Lesheni Bemataim. The first buyer then sells it to a second buyer for 200. Einu Mechashev Elimah Rishon. The original owner, when he comes to redeem the field, he goes to the person he sold it to first, and he calculates the amount. So if it was over a 50-year period, just make this for ease, and it's 100 zuz, that's 2 zuz a year, then whatever number of years have elapsed, he deducts times 2, and then the remainder is what he pays to redeem the field. And we ignore the fact that it was sold afterwards for a higher price. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Ish ki lo yelo goel v'siga yado matzakidei gulato, he raises sufficient funds to redeem it, v'chishav et shnei mim karo, figures out the number of years, and he gives back the residual amount to the person to whom he sold it, and then he returns to his field. So he negotiates only with the person that asher macharlo, that he sold it to. And that's why he's going to focus on the 100 sale price and not the 200 sale price. Now, the other guy's got to work it out with the other party that he sold it to. He'll have to redeem it, and he'll lose that money. In that he made money because for whatever years he had it outstanding, he was getting twice as much as what he paid for it. For the person who paid 200, let's assume that, again, it was over a 50-year period. It's going to be shorter than that because some time has elapsed already. But say that it's 4 zuz per year. That means that the person who sold it is getting 4 zuz per year and paying 2 zuz per year. So then whenever the original owner comes in and takes it back, so he loses the residual there, but for the period of time that he had it sold to the other party, and he was holding on to it and paying the owner technically 2 zuz per year, he makes 2 zuz a year. And so he still makes money. He's not going to lose money in the transaction. So now, so what about the reverse? Bimataim, the original owner sold it to the buyer for 200. And then the first buyer sells it to the second buyer for 100. Einu mechashev imal acharon. Then the owner only goes after the latter party because that's the cheaper price. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, v'chishav et shnei mem karo, I mean the pasuk that we quoted before, it's the same pasuk, v'chishav et ha'odif, and he will give back the residual, le'ish. So now the Gemara here, the Mishnah here cuts off the pasuk. Instead of saying le'ish asher makarlo, it writes le'ish and stops there. It's obviously le'ish is extraneous language, which was unnecessary. It could just say v'shivat odef v'asher machar lo. What is le'ish? So the Gemara darshins le'ish asher b'tocho, to the one who is now present in the field, the one who's now there. So that makes it that he gets the upper hand in both situations. If it was originally sold at a lower price, then he negotiates with the original buyer in order to get back or buy back based on the lower price. If it was subsequently sold for a lower price, then he negotiates with the second buyer, and he takes it back at that lower price. So he gets the advantage in either case. And it makes some sense that we're doing this to advantage the individual who's trying to buy it back is because the parshiyah begins. When he falls on hard times and he is impoverished and he has to sell his ancestral lands, so then you have a demand on the Krovim to try to come and redeem it on his behalf. And then he himself is going to try to redeem it. It was considered to be a last resort for someone to sell their ancestral lands, both because of their connection to the land, because of the familial connection and kedusha that's associated with the land, and the fact that that was the main vehicle for stored value in their day. And so owning the land and keeping the land was important. So if a person has to sell it under duress, we're going to try to give them ways to undo that or to reverse the duress that they have fallen under. Lo yimkor berachok vigal bikarov. He shouldn't sell fields that are further away in order to redeem a field that is closer to him. And as the Baal HaTosfot will point out, vice versa, he can't sell fields that are closer to redeem a field that's further away. We'll see in the Gemara why that is. It's a gzeret hakatuv. But the idea being that if you had that choice originally to sell the other field, and you made the choice to sell this field, then we're not going to let you reverse that afterwards and sell the other field and then replace it with this field. So you have to come up with the funds to redeem this field, not by monetizing your other assets. Bira'ah v'igal b'yafah. And the same thing is true if you have a higher and lower quality field, that you can't sell your lower quality fields to redeem the higher quality fields, and vice versa. V'lo yuveh v'igal. And you shouldn't borrow money and redeem it. V'lo yigal l'chatzein. And you also can't redeem it in portions or in pieces. You have to redeem the whole thing or none of it. U'be'ekdesh mutar b'kulan. When it comes to ekdesh, you can do any of these. All of those are permitted. Zechomer be'ejot shebe'ekdesh. This is the chumrah that exists by lay people versus by hekdesh. By lay people, you don't have all these possibilities or dispensations to redeem it in part, to redeem it by borrowing, to redeem it by selling something else and redeeming this. None of those are permitted by a hedyot, but they are all permitted by hekdesh. And again, at the end of today's Gemara, we'll see why that is the case. Tanur banan, machrad rishon b'maneh, sold it to the first buyer for 100, u'machrad rishon ha'sheni b'matayim. And the first one sells it to the second one for 200. Minayin sheni mechashev elem rishon. How do we know that he only calculates or works out with the first one, the lower price? Tamalomar, Leish asher macharlo, the pasuk that we quoted before, that you negotiate with the person that you sold it to. Machar l'rishon b'matayim, on the other hand, if he sold it for 200 to the first buyer, machar rishon l'sheni, and the first buyer sold it to a second buyer, b'maneh, for 100, minayin she'en mechashvim elem asheni, how do you know then that the original owner has the right to negotiate to redeem it from the second buyer, and he doesn't have to go to the higher price first buyer? Tamlomar leish. Leish asher betocho. Again, that extraneous language of leish tells you to deal with the party that's present in the field now. Divrei Rabbi. That's Rabbi's view. Rabbi's view, obviously, is what is manifest in the Mishnah. You go after the lower price. Whichever buyer paid the lower price, that is the determining factor for when you go to redeem it, and you negotiate with whomever paid the lower price. Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda Omer, machra lo b'maneh, if he sold it to him for 100, vihishbicha, and then it appreciated in value. As Rashi notes over here, appreciation over here means a market appreciation, nothing to do with the investment in the field, because we already spoke about the fact that if the person actually invests in the field, then the seller of the field would have to purchase that or pay him back, compensate him for the investment he made in the field. V'amda al-matayim. So it appreciated, and now it's worth 200. V'nayin shenu mechashev ela b'maneh. How do I know that despite the appreciation, you still negotiate with the buyer based on the 100 that you sold it to him? Shenemar, ha'neshiv et ha'odif. Ha'odif, shebiyado. You return the excess amount, the change that you have in your hand. So he paid you 100, and then you have to return to him the residual of that 100 based on the amortizing of the years that he holds on to the field. So the calculation is based on what's left over from the purchase price. Macharlo b'matayim, the other hand, sold it to him for 200. V'heksifa, and then it depreciated. V'amdal maneh, now it's only worth 100 zuz. V'nayin shem ha'chashvin ala b'maneh. How would I know then you only pay or calculate the value based on the 100 that's the current value? Shnemar, because it says, v'shiv et ha'odif, that you return the excess. So again, he parses the pasuk in such a way that it says, v'chishav et shnei memkaro, v'shiv et ha'odif, v'hishasher machalo, v'shav dechuzato. So in the first case, he learns, v'shiv et ha'odif, the odif is the excess amount, shibiyado, that he got paid originally. And in the second version, it's v'shiv et ha'odif, means the odif shibakarka. He has to pay back the residual amount that's left in the land. What value is left in the land? The value now that's worth 100, how much of that value exists from now till the Yovel? How much of that is left? Had they started from the beginning of the period when he sold it, and then they amortize that amount, the 100 instead of 200 over that period of time, that's the old day. That's the remaining amount of value in the field currently. So the Gemara says, my benayu, what's the nafkamina between Rabbi and Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda? Both of them agree in the end that you go to Kula and you always go with the lower price. So why does it matter how they learn it if they come out with the same, they came out with the same answer in the end? Is it just mashmaot dorshim? Is it just the fact that they learn it from a different source, but they really have the same opinion? Or is there a halachic difference between them? The Gemara says there is. Ika benayu, the yaker, vizal, the yaker. In a case where they appreciated, then depreciated, and then appreciated again. So in that scenario, you're going to come up with a nafkamina between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Dustai. Rashi explains this based on the fact that Rabbi is very focused on purchase prices. And that is that the purchase price is what determines what the value of the field is, not necessarily the current price, not the fluctuation in the price, but rather what was the purchase price. And so therefore here, where it was sold for 200, and then Rashi says the first guy who bought it for 200 now sells it to another party, a second buyer, for 100, and then v'nityak rabi adosheni, and then in the hands of the second buyer, it appreciates to 200. So now, according to Rabi, who says that it goes based on the person who purchased it, he only pays 100. Because one of the two purchasers over here paid 100 for it. There was the first buyer who bought it at 200, the second buyer who bought it at 100. Rabbi says you either pay based on the first buyer or the second buyer. And the second buyer paid 100. So you can negotiate now with the second buyer at 100. On the other hand, Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda says, it either is based on the residual of the purchase price or the residual of the current market price. Well, in our scenario, they're both the same. He sold it first party, sold the original land to the first party at 200 zuz, and then it went down, then he sold it to it, the first party sold it to the second party for 100 zuz, but then in the hands of the second party, it appreciated to 200 zuz. So the current market value is also on 200 zuz. So whether you go after the original purchase price and you're defeasing it, or you go after the current market price, both of them are 200 zuz. And so you come out with the same answer. You're going to have to pay based on the amortization of that 200 zuz over the period of time that it's been held by the buyers. And so that'll be the nafkamina between them. Now Rashi over here introduces something that bothers the Rishonim, and the Baal HaTosafot supposed to really try to address this, which is Rashi says that there were two buyers here. Something that the Gemara never mentioned. The Gemara never mentioned the fact that there was a second buyer. All it said that happened was that it appreciated, it depreciated, and appreciated. Doesn't mention a second buyer. Rashi entered a second buyer in order to create the nafkamina because Rashi points out that the difference between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Dustai is that Rabbi focuses on purchase prices. So you need a purchase price in order to have Rabbi be affected, and that's what Rashi did by creating a second buyer there, creating a lower purchase price. Rabbi Yehuda ben Dustai focuses on the first purchase price and the market price, and the interim buyer doesn't make a difference. That's why Rashi did it. But as the Baal HaTosafot point out, why do you need to do that? You could have created the same exact scenario by having it in the hands of one party. And that is, the field came into that hands of that party. Let's say he purchased it for 200 zuz, and then it depreciates to 100 zuz. So in that case, according to Rabbi, you always focus on the purchase price. So the purchase price was 200, and that would be the governing price over here. Rabbi Yehuda ben Dustai says you either do it by the purchase price or the market price. The market price now lower, and so you go by the lower price. But Tosafot says you can create the same nafkamina without entering a second buyer. So Tosafot says, Hu adinda matzi de meimar de yakir v'zal b'lokeach echad bilvad. And you would have the same nafkamina, just over here, Rabbi would be the Chumra, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Dustai would be the Kula. So then why didn't they do that, or why didn't Rashi do that? It says, Lefi da'ari b'matnitin b'shnei mochrin, nechle de minkat nami ike benayu b'shnei mochrin. Because our Mishnah was a case of two buyers, so now, so too here, the Gemara, when identifying the normative difference between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Dustai, they want to use the same case as the Mishnah, where there are two buyers. So that's how Tosafot learns it, that the nafkamina would exist even with one buyer, just that because of the parallel to the Mishnah, Rashi mentions it, and that's what the Gemara meant, that it was speaking about two buyers. The Shita Mikubetzet in Ot Yud brings from the Rosh that he disagrees vehemently with the Balei Tosafot. Based on what the Tosafot said here, he says, V'lo nihira. The lo matzina meimar hachi. There's no way that you could say that. If what the Tosafot says is true, then the Gemara would never have asked, my benayu, what's the nafkamina between the two positions? Because tuva ika benayu. There's a huge gulf between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai. The Rabbi lo ari be'ech sifa, ela b'shnei lochim. Rabbi's whole din only applies to two buyers, not appreciation and depreciation. Aval b'chad lokeach, but with one buyer, afilu ech sifa notain kasher machar. Because according to Rabbi, when you have a single buyer, and that's what the Balei Tosafot said, you'll be focused on the purchase price, not the market price. So the Rosh says, if Tosafot is right, then why did the Gemara bother asking my benayu? I'll tell you the difference between them. Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai is governed by market price, and Rabbi is governed by purchase price. And so whenever you have a differential between the market price and the purchase price, that's when you're going to get enough kamina between them. Why do you have to come up with the question of ma'ika benayu? Because of that, the Rosh says, Ela pshita lei dafilu Rabbi modeh v'chsifa dekarinim bei le'ish asher b'tocha. That even Rabbi agrees that when the price depreciates, then we govern it based on the party that is present in the field now. Kmo she'ata v'tochon, because he is there now. Just like the second buyer is considered to be the ish asher b'tocho, the party that's in the field now, so too the original buyer is also considered to be the party that's in the field now. So the price changes between the purchase price and the market price later on, then he, Rabbi, would say the same thing. Well, the purchase price is 200, the current price is 100, so is it going to be based on the Isha Sher Macharlo, the purchase price, or is it going to be the Isha Sher Betocho? And the person that's in there right now is in a field that's only worth 100. And so according to the Rosh, if it had been only one party over here, Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai would have the same position, unlike what the Balei Tosafot say. That there would be a nafkamina that Rabbi would follow the purchase price and Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai would follow the market price when it depreciated. Rosh says that even Rabbi would agree if it depreciates that you're governed by the person that's in it now and the market price, and he would pay the lower amount. That's why the Gemara needs to ask, Ma'ika benayu, what's the difference between them? Because in a scenario with a single buyer, they have the exact same din, no matter what happens according to the Rosh. And the only nafkamina is actually when there are two buyers involved. That's where the nafkamina comes up. Two buyers, when it appreciates, depreciates, and appreciates, that's when you get a nafkamina. That's why the Gemara asked about it, because otherwise they seem to be almost identical, their positions. And the Gemara came up with this case where there is a normative difference between Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai. So the Rosh disagrees with Tosafot's interpretation of why Rashi said that it's two buyers over here. Tosafot just said because to match the Mishnah, but not because halakhically it's different than a single buyer. The Rosh says that's not true. The reason he said two buyers over here is because one buyer would not be an afkamina. Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai would agree by a single buyer. Now the Gemara says, Umimai delekula dilma lechumra. How do you know over here that you should always go the kula and not the chumra? The limudim of Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai could equally be done in the opposite direction. It says there's governing by the buyer, and then there's governing by the party that's present in it now, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Distai. There's governing by the original residual price, and there's governing by the residual market price currently. So now, the way that we did it was we say you go to the kula in both cases. Whichever one is lower, that's which one is being spoken about. You could have just said it the other way around. Whichever one is higher, that's what governs over here, and you would just, again, would have reversed the limudim, but it would come out the same way, and it would be no different. How do you know to go the kula and not the chumrah? So the Gemara says, lo sakadatcha, that we wouldn't do the Gemara gula mi evid ivri. Because we learn gzeira shava of gula from an evid ivri. So I sent out the psukim yesterday for the perek. It has the psukim laid out in Vayikra Chavhei, which is a lot of the parshiot that we're going to deal with the remainder of the perek, as well as some of the residuals from Vayikra Chav Zayin that we spoke about previously and we'll mention here again as well as one or two parshiot that are found in Devarim. So Vayikra Chav Hei, when it's speaking about the Eved Ivri here is an Eved Ivri that sold himself to a non-Jewish owner. And there it says, V'chita sig yad ger v'toshav imach v'mach achicha imo, v'nimkar l'ger toshav imach, o l'eker mishpachat ger, acharei nimkar, after he's sold, he has the capacity to be redeemed. He has the ability to be bought back, and one of his brethren will step up and redeem him and take him out of this terrible position that he is in. So there it says, Ge'ula. And by the stay akuza, by which an individual is selling his ancestral lands, there too we have the term Ge'ula used, which that when he finds the capacity or the monies to redeem the property, then he has a right to redeem the property. So there's a gu'ula mentioned by the Eved Ivri, and there's a gu'ula that's mentioned by the Stei Achuza. And just like by the Eved Ivri, we say that he has a right to the gu'ula, and that gu'ula is based on the lower price. So too over here, we're going to say the same thing. Mar says, V'hata minalan. Okay. You made an assumption that by Eved Ivri, you also go the kula over there. How do you know that by an Eved Ivri, he also gets the right to go with the lower of the purchase price or the market price on the residual years that he has left in his requirements to work? The Tanya, because of a breakta. Nimkar b'maneh, if he was sold for 100 zuz, bishbiach, and he appreciated, b'amar ha-matayim, and now he's worth 200 zuz. Inayin shein mechashvim ele b'maneh. How do we know that you only calculate his residual price, meaning his ability to buy himself out is the original purchase price divided over the years that he's going to work for this adon, and then each year that he works, you defease, you take down that amount from the purchase price, and if he raises the cash for the residual amount, he can buy himself out. What is the price that you're using? You're using the purchase price of a manet. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, by the Eved Ivri, Mikesef Miknato, says Im Odra Bot Pashanim, PM Yeshiv Geulato, he'll pay for his redemption, Mikesef Miknato, from the monies of his purchase price. So that's Mikesef Miknato. Nimkar b'mataim, if he was sold originally for 200, Vihsif, and then he depreciated Bamada Maneh, and now he's only worth 100, Minayin Shemach Shvim Elamimi Maneh. How do I know that you only calculate based on the market price now, the 100 zuz? Shenemar, because the subsequent pasuk says, Imma'at Nishar Bashanim, if there are a small number of years left, Achnat Yovel, Bechishav Lo, Kifi Shanav, goes according to the number of years left, Yeshivet Gulato. So Kifi Shanav would be, as opposed to Kesef Miknato, which was his purchase price, Kifi Shanav means, how much is his value left, the residual until the Yovel, and the amount of years, based on the value that he is, that will determine how much he needs to pay. And then how do you know there that it's the kula? You basically set up the same structure again that we had by the stei achuza, which is you have two options of how to pay, and you can either learn both of them the kula or both of them the chumra. Same thing over here. You have one time where you follow the purchase price, and you have one time when you follow the residual years or the market price. So how do you know to do that the kula and not the chumra? Again, Abayu will come back and explain that in a second. But the Gemara is assuming now that the Braita has already governed and told us this information. And now that we know it's true by an Eved Ivri, through the word Ge'ula, Ge'ula, Ge'ula that's found by the Eved Ivri and Gulato, which is found by the Stei Achuza, from there we learn that whatever is true by the Eved Ivri is also true in the Stei Achuza. And since by the Eved Ivri we go to Kula on the two possibilities, so too by the Stei Achuza we're going to go to Kula of the two possibilities. It says, Ein le'ela Eved Ivri, anim karlo ovid kochavim. That's only true of an Eved Ivri that was sold to a non-Jew, Shinigal, that he's allowed to be redeemed, Viado ala Yonah, and he has the upper hand in that situation. Now, whether that means he has the upper hand because we're dealing with a Jew versus a non-Jew, or do we say that halachically the Torah prescribes a means for him to redeem himself? The whole parshia of Giron Kesef, the ability to defease, amortize the purchase price over the time that he's working there, that's all spelled out in the parshia of Eved Ivri that's been sold to a non-Jew. That's not written by an Eved Ivri that's sold to a Jew. So what the Gemara is asking is, so there, Yadol Yonah, because the Torah spells out his ability to redeem himself. Nimkar Yisrael minayin. When he sells himself to a Jew rather than a non-Jew, how do I know that he has that same ability or same right? Tamalomar sachir, sachir l'gzeir shavah. So the word sachir appears here by the Eved Ivri that sells himself to an Ovei Kochavim, because it says, V'chishav im koneo mishnat himachro lo, ad shnat yovel, v'ya kesef mimkaro b'mispar shanim, kimei sachir iyayimo. he is a laborer that's working for him. The laborer is paid on a yearly salary. The yearly salary is the amount that he paid up front, divided by the number of years that till the Yovel when he's going to go free. Now, likely the Yovel is mentioned over here because by the Eved Ivri that's sold to a non-Jew, there are a few that believe that he has only a 6-year term, like by an Eved Ivri that's sold to Israel. But most believe, and the way halacha is, that it's until the Yovel, that he is working for this non-Jew until the Yovel. That means the yearly salary is the purchase price divided by the number of years left until the Yovel. And he's called a Sakhir. He's a laborer that's being paid based on that method. The word Sakhir appears here. And by the Parshia of Eved Ivri in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Ted Vav, also over there it says, Lo yikshe b'enecha b'shalechecha uto chavshi mimach. When you release him after he's worked for you, it shouldn't be difficult for you. Ki mishneh skar sakhir avadecha. He worked for you, whether mishneh means double, like the way Rashi and Chazal explained it over there, or that he paid his dues of a sakhir over that period of time. Avdecha sheh shanim, ubechecha Hashem lekecha kol asher taseh. Hashem will bless you for releasing him and putting him on his feet. So there also you see the word sakhir appears there. And the Gezer Shava tells us whatever is true by the Eved Ivri that works for the non-Jewish owner is also true of an Eved Ivri that works for a Jewish owner. And that means that you get the advantage of redeeming oneself through Giron Kesef by defeasing, amortizing the purchase price over the number of years that you're going to work. And you also get the upper hand, which is the lower of the purchase price. And the current market price will determine what the residual amount you need to pay in order to free yourself. Now, Amar Abaye. Abaye deals with the question that we noted before, which is that the Eved Ivri presents the same problem that the Steach Huzah presented, which is that the Eved Ivri also, you could have learned it the Kula, you learned it the Chumrah. So Abaye says about himself, Hareini ke ben azai b'shukei Tveria. I'm like Ben Azai when he used to be Doresh b'shukei Tveria. Ben Azai, who's known as a very sharp, erudite Talmud Chacham. We just saw in the Gemara in Bechorot on Daf Kofchet that Ben Azai says about himself, Kol Chachmei Yisrael lefanai ke klipat hashum. All the Chachmei Yisrael are likened to me like a peel of garlic. Chutz min hakireach hazeh, with the exception of this quote-unquote bold one, if it's a reference to Rabbi Akiva. Ben Azai was a Talmud Chaver of Rabbi Akiva, but Ben Azai is extremely sharp, extremely erudite, and he used to be Doresh in public, and wasn't afraid of being challenged, and wasn't worried about people asking him questions. He was a very powerful darshan. And so what Baye is saying about himself, which other Amoraim say about themselves as well, is when he has a day when he's very clear in thought, and he's able to answer questions, and he feels like he has, in a sense, siyata dishmaya, or he has Superman powers on that day in his learning, he compares himself to Ben Azai. Rashi says that Abaye was saying this about himself, Mishubach mimkomi shani darshan ubaki kben azai shaya mishtabach b'shukei Tveria. That I am as great a darshan in my locale, and I am a darshan and a baki in halacha, the way Ben Azai was in the Shukei Tveria. So Rashi sees it as a more direct comparison to Ben Azai, saying just like Ben Azai was a super darshan and baki in his location, I have the same status in my location. But the more common expression, because it's used in other places in Shas, means that he had a certain amount of clarity of thought, clairvoyance, that came to him on that day. And he says, I can explain things. So one of the Rabbanan posed this question to Abaye. You could be Doresh by the Eved Ivri, both the Chumrah and the Kula. How do you know you go to Kula and not the Chumrah? Again, we traded one problem for another problem. We said, oh, stay Achuzah, we don't know whether to go to Kula or Chumrah. Said, no problem, we have Gzer Shop with Eved Ivri. So you just traded the problem of stay Achuzah to the problem of Eved Ivri, but Eved Ivri had the same problem. Do you go to Kula or do you go to Chumrah? It says, Lo Sakadatcha, that you would not, so, Abaye says, Lo Sakadatcha, you wouldn't say that. Midakil Rachmanan Gabe. Because the Torah is Mekil by the Eved Ivri. Detanya, because you have a Braita, the Posuk says, Ki tov lo imach. So that's a reference to a Eved Ivri in that same Parshia in Dvarim Perek Tevav where a person sells himself as an Eved Ivri to a Jewish owner at the end of the elapsed 6 years, which is the term for duration for which he is subject to being an Eved Ivri, he has then the option to say, Vayak Yomer Lecha, Lo Yitzei Mi'imach, Ke'evecha Vet Beitecha, I don't want to leave you. I don't want to stop being your Eved Ivri, because I love you and I love your household, I love your family. Ki Tov Lo Imach, because things are really good for him there. Then you do the Vakachta de Marzeyav and Atat de Boznova Delet, you pierce his ear into the door, Vayalecha Eved Olam, and then he remains an Eved to you forever, and the Chazal said Lo Olamahu Shel Yovel, that he stays with him until the Yovel. Now the Ki Tov Lo Imach is supposedly what the Brit is about to darshan. The Tosafot is circumspect about that, because he says, Kitov lo imach is not a tzivoy of the Torah. Kitov lo imach is a narrative of the Torah. It's telling you that when the Eved Ivri feels this way, or he feels like, I don't want to leave you because I love you and your family, Kitov lo imach, because he's having a good time, that's not a tzivoy telling that you have to make it a good time for him. It's just saying that he is having a good time. So Tosafot wants to replace Kitov lo imach with the alternate pasuk, that the Sifrei says, Ketoshav v'sachir iye imach, that he will be with you like a toshav and a sachir. And he says that iye lach, that's the loch that they're referring to in the Gemara over here, and not the Kitov lo imach, which is found by the Parshia of Eved Ivri in Vayikra Chavei, where he sells himself to a Jewish owner, says, V'chi yamuch achich imach v'nimkar lach, lo tavod bo abudat avet, kisachir Ketoshav Yeimach, Ashnat Yovel Yavod Imach. Tosafot thinks that they're dashing that word Imach from there, because that's a command, that he be a Toshav and Sachir, not Kitovlo Imach. Although other Rishonim disagree and say Kitovlo Imach is the source, even though that's not a Tzivui. And that then has ramifications in terms of the Dinim we're about to learn, whether they are an imperative, and an enforceable imperative, which means that the Eved Ivri could go to court to make demands that the Balim do this, or are these simply a directive or a spirit of the law that the Torah is trying to convey to you? And then the difference in which pasuk you use will actually have influence over this. If you think that it's a tzivoy, and it needs to be tzivoy like the Balim Tosafot are saying over here, then it sounds like it's an imperative, and maybe even an enforceable imperative. Whereas if you say it comes from Kitov lo imach, that just means that the Torah is indicating the way it should be, or the feeling that it should be engendered, or the way the Eved Ivri should feel. And these are the ways that you do that, so that is a directive, but not an imperative, and therefore it may not be a court-enforceable law. That is, Kitov lo imach, imcha v'machal, imcha v'mishteh. He eats with you, and he drinks with you. Shelo tei ochel pat nikiya, you shouldn't be eating white bread, v'u ochel pat kibar, and he's eating whole wheat. Again, in their day, white bread was seen to be as better than whole wheat. Today, maybe it would be reversed. Ata shotei yayin yashan, you drink aged wine, v'shotei yayin chadash, and the Eved Ivri has to drink new wine or grape juice. Ata yashen al gabi muchin, you sleep on soft mattresses, v'yashen al gabi akarka, and he sleeps on the ground. So you can't do this, brother imach. He has to be with you. You can't do any of these items to have these differentials exist. You have to treat him like you treat yourself, or make him into a peer who you treat with the same pampering and benefits that you would garner for yourself. And the truth is, the Gemara in Kedushin says that it actually might work out that it's the reverse, which is that if the individual only has one bed, then he can't sleep on the bed and have the Eved Ivri sleep on the floor, because then he's in violation of Kitov lo imach. So it actually be in reverse. The owner will have to sleep on the floor, and the Eved will sleep in the bed. And that's why the Bright concludes with, Mikan Amru. From here you would conclude, Okone Eved Ivri, Kukone Adon Latzmo. When you purchase an Eved Ivri, it's like you're buying a master for yourself. So there you see that the Eved Ivri gets the upper hand. So what Abaye is pointing out is, just like over there he gets the upper hand, so too when it comes to redemption, he should get the upper hand. So Mar says, Adarabba, Nachmir Lei, Mitarab Yosi Rabbi Chanina. So from that bright that you might have thought to go the kula on him, because he gets the upper hand, but there's also the position of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, which would make us think the opposite. Dam Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, Borek Kamakashe Avka Shel Shvi'it. Let's see how difficult or punishing it is for one to violate the dust of Shvi'it. Avka Shoshvit, or any time the Gemara uses the term avak, like avak ribit, avak lashon hara, all of those items mean an ancillary violation, a secondary or tertiary violation of the isur. It's not the primary isur. That either is because it's only an issue, maybe derabanan, or maybe because it's something that is extrapolated from the main din, or maybe because it's a side effect of the din. And over here, the issue that we're speaking about here is socher b'perot shvi'it, which is the Gemara says here, adam nosev noten b'perot shvi'it. Person is transacting, he is treating perot shvi'it, is doing commercial trade in perot shvi'it, which is the isur. Now, as Rashi over here says, v'hachin kar le'avak, that's why it's called the dust of shvi'it, shein zu ikar mitzvata, shel isur shvi'it. This is the main problem of isur shvi'it, the restriction against using perot shvi'it in commercial transactions or trading them commercially. That's not the main isur. Tosafot about clarifies, what is the main isur then? The main isur is the avodat hakarko, that is working the land on shvi'it. The isur of chavishak, tzira, all the melachot hakarko, that's the major restrictions of shvi'it. The other items of kedushat perot shvi'it, as well as anything associated with the perot shvi'it, are all sidebars, ancillary items to the major isurim of shvi'it, which are not working the land on shvi'it. That's the way that the Balei Tosafot explain it. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, says that the Ikar Yisur over here is the Yisur of Shmirah, of Perot Shvi'it, which is mentioned by the Balei Tosafot at the end of the Gemara in Yevamot as being something that could actually make the Perot Asurim. It is a unique and singular opinion with regards to this, that the Shmirah of Perot Shvi'it, not allowing them to become Hefker, actually makes them Asurim. Whereas most Rishonim believe that it's a problematic, but it doesn't engender an Isur Chetza in the Perot Shvi'it. But nevertheless, the Rebbeinu Gershom over here suggests that the major Isur with regards to Perot Shvi'it is the lack of making them Hefker. It means that you keep them for yourself rather than making them Hefker. Transacting them is a sidebar to that, or a secondary issue with regards to that. The primary issue is that we don't want you treating them like your own. We don't want you treating them and keeping them for your, treating them as your own or keeping them for yourself. That's the way the Rebbeinu Gershom learns it. But then the Balei Tosafot say, if that's the case, how do you know that the Sukkim in Vayikra, which we're about to now darshan based on the Smuchim of the Parshiot over there, how do you know they're speaking about Sochrei Perot Shvi'it and not the primary aspect of Shvi'it, which is Chavishan Ketzira? So the Balei Tosafot say, the answer to that is because it's Midah Keneged Midah. We're going to see that the punishments are all about selling yourself and your property. So the Isur that you violated must have to do something with commercial transactions and selling and buying. So that's how the Gemara knows that the violation here is a violation of Shvi'it involved in transactions. So now it's what Yosef Rabbi Chanina tells us, that a person that's Nosev Notem B'Perot Shvi'it, Nosov Melcher Et Mital Tolav. In the end, he ends up selling his Mital Tolim, his non-real assets, Shinamar, Bishnate Yovel Azot, Tashuva Ish El Achuzato, says that in the Yovel, everybody will return to their former properties, their former ownership, Uchtiv, and then afterwards it says, Chitim Kiril Mimkar La'amitecha Ukano Miyad Amitecha, Davar HaNikneh Miyad Liyad. So that Pasuk that's speaking about transactions of Metaltalim, because the drasha is, what does it mean, Kano Miyad? Davar nikneh miyad liyad, something that can be passed from hand to hand. That's not talking about real assets. That's not talking about karka. That's speaking about metaltalin. So that's what we're speaking about there, that the person is selling. Why is he selling? Because he's under economic duress because of the averot that he has performed. This is a kinyan that is effective between two parties for metaltalin. That's what we learned from these psukim. Comes right after the issue of Yovel. It happens to be interesting just because of the layout of the psukim, which started in the beginning of Parshat Bahar with Shemitah and Yovel. Then it speaks about Mechirat Metaltalim, Davar Niknem Yad Yad, which is the puzzle we just quoted. And then it speaks about Mechirat Sde Achuzato. And then it goes back to Shemitah and Yovel again, and then moves over again Mechirat Gulat Sde Achuzato. Then it speaks about selling and the redeeming of his Sde Achuzah. So the Shemitah and Yovel appears twice in here, which the Breita is going to ignore completely, but just work from the beginning of Bahar, where it speaks about Shemitah and Yovel. The next thing that we speak about is Metaltalin. So what he's saying is, why are you selling your Metaltalin? because you did something wrong with regards to Shemitah and Yovel. And the Gemara's assumption is that you were trading in Peirot Shvi'it because you're losing something transactionally, so it must be that you did something wrong transactionally. And that is Avkash Shel Shvi'it, that you were involved in Socher Nosev Notein BePeirot Shvi'it. Lo Hir Gish, if he doesn't take heed or pay attention to that's what's happening, that his economic situation is degrading because of this sin, the Sof Mocheret stowed up. Then he ends up selling his fields, because the next Parshia is Mechirat Ste'achuzato. And then again, I told you, there's a little Shemitah and Yovel piece again, and then again, it speaks about selling of Ste'achuzah. So that's the next in the stages over here, which is Ki Yamuch Achicha Umachar Me'achuzato. When he falls on hard times, and he becomes impoverished, and he has to sell his ancestral lands, that's what we said before, people only sell their ancestral lands under duress. So he is under duress. Why is he under duress? Because he's sinning, and he's not taking heed that he's sinning, and things are getting worse. Lo bat yado, if he doesn't figure it out by then, the sof mocheret beito. Then the next parshia over there speaks about ish kimkor beit moshav, ir choma. You sell a house in a walled city. So the next thing you sell after you sell your fields is your residence. So that's the next thing he has to put up for sale because he continues to sin. Shneamar, because of the pasuk that we just read, ish kimkor beit moshav, ir choma. The Gemara once interjects and says, Maishna hatam, the kamar lo hir gish, or Maishna acha, the kamar lo bat liado. The Braita should have used the same language. Either lo hir gish, lo hir gish, or lo bat liado, lo bat liado. So, one of the two. He didn't sense or understand what was going on. Therefore, he's punished again. Or lo bat liado. He hasn't figured out that there's something wrong over here. And then it continues to happen to him. So, use the same language in both cases. The answer of the Gemara is, Kid Rav Huna, what we know from the Gemara in Yoma, Dama Rav Huna, Kevin Shavar Adam Avera, Vishanaba, once a person has violated an Avera, and then repeats it, Hutralo, it is Mutar for him. Gemara says, Hutralo? Sakadatka, how could you say that it's Mutar for him? It's still an Avera. Ela, Ema, Naset, Lo Keheter. It becomes like a Heter for him, meaning that he no longer has the reticence, or the guilty feelings, of violating an Avera. The first time a person violates an Avera, they have certain emotions of guilt and feeling bad about doing something wrong that somewhat press against or pressure them not to do it. So now they might have failed and they violated it, but they still feel bad about it. And even the second time they come to do it, they still feel bad about it. But once they've done it twice already, it becomes almost second nature, by which they stop having those pangs of guilt, and they stop having that reticence about violating the Avera, and now it becomes as if nothing to do that. If you speak to anybody who has been through a crisis of faith, and when they start to violate certain things, the first time that they violate it, it's really shocking to their system, they have tremendous pangs of guilt, but as they do it more and more, it becomes less burdensome to them. That's what's being described over here. So the first time is lo hir gish. As Rashi says, he didn't really feel it. He didn't sense it, which means that he's still feeling, and his heart is still touched by it when he violates the Avera. Lo Yergish means that he didn't have that emotion. He wasn't able to bring up that emotion to stop himself, but there's still Hargasha. There's still feelings there. On the other hand, when it comes to Lo Bat Yado, it means Shafilo Libo Ein Olash Etei Avera. Lo bat yado means he doesn't even recognize it. It's not even in his consciousness anymore. It's not something that he even considers or thinks about when he goes to do the Avera. That's what it means, lo bat yado. That's why the language switched between the second time he did the Avera and the third time he does the Avera. So now we're going to skip the parentheses and come back to them in a second. Lo bat yado. If he doesn't correct his ways, he doesn't pay heed to what's happening, ad shemacharet bito, until he sells his daughter. Now this is an oddity because Ama Ivriya is found in Parshat Mishpatim. It is not found here in Perchaf Hei in Vayikra in Parshat Behar. Shenamar, because it says, V'chim Koish et Bito Le'ama. V'af Agav de Bito B'hayin Yonoleta. The Gemara acknowledges that it's not there in the order. The whole idea of this drasha is that there is a Smichut HaParshiot in Parshat Behar. It speaks about Shemitah. Then it speaks about Kinyan Metaltalim. Then it speaks about selling a steyachuzah. Then it says speaks about selling a house. So all those are what called smichut aparshiot, that they are juxtaposed to each other to teach you that there's a continuum here, a downfall of an individual who is engage in an avera of what the Gemara calls abkashel shvit, or no seven no tain beperot shvit. So how do you end up with this selling his daughter? The answer the Gemara says is nechad inish blizvin brata v'lo lizov peri bita. The next parshia there in Vayikra Avhe is he borrows money with interest, which is ki amucha chicha umatay yadoimach. When he falls again impoverished on difficult times, he is under duress. You're not allowed to charge him interest. Now the ger and the toshav might charge him interest. So the person now is starting to borrow money with interest. And what the Gemara says is a person would rather sell his daughter as an amai briah before he borrows with interest. And that is de'ilu hatam migra va'azlo. That is when he sells his daughter as an amai briah, there's a self-defeasing, amortizing schedule by which she will go free. She will go free once she reaches of age or she completes the term of her indentureship. And the price also diminishes, which means that over time, if you want to buy her out or she wants to buy herself out, the price will drop every year that she works for this adon. So it's actually working in your favor in paying off the indebtedness. Bilohocha kamotz ve'azla. By interest, it does just the opposite. It accretes and it goes up every single year because the interest just compounds the problem and continues to add up the difficulties that you have. So a person would rather sell his daughter before he borrows with interest. And that's the reason that the Gemara interjects this idea of selling his daughter as an amai briah before he borrows with interest. That's obviously the next line over here. Lo bat liyado. And that's the parentheses that we skipped before. Lo bat liyado, lesof shelove beribit. If he doesn't pay heed to what's happening, then in the end he's going to end up borrowing with interest. Shenemar chiyamucha chicha. It's obviously enjoining you not to take interest from him because he's taking out loans with interest or willing to take them out to deal with his difficult situation, or there are others, foreigners, that are charging him that interest and you need to protect him or help him out in that situation. Again, if he doesn't pay attention to that, then he ends up selling himself as an Eved Ivri. The first parshia of Eved Ivri there is selling himself to an adon that is a Jewish adon. Shenemar ki amucha chicha imach v'nimkar lach. He sells himself to you. Lo lecha ela leger. Not only does he end up selling himself to you, but the situation gets worse and worse, which is the next parshia there, is a Jewish person who sells himself as an Eved Ivri to a non-Jew. Because it says there, v'chi tasig yad ger v'toshav imach umach chicha imo. So the ger toshav is rising and succeeding, and your brother, the Jew, is falling on hard times and under duress. Nimkar the ger toshav, and he ends up selling himself to the ger toshav. Imach, ola eker mishpachat ger. And the Gemara is going to darshan what's meant by this. Lo lecha, ela leger. Not only to you, but even to a ger. Shenemar leger. That's what the pasuk we just read. But not to the ger tzedek, ela leger toshav. Shenemar leger toshav. Then, mishpachat ger. So then when it says the ger toshav imach or the ger mishpachat ger, what is mishpachat ger? Zeh oved kochavim. That's not even a ger toshav. That's a full-fledged oved avodah zarah that he sells himself to as an adon. Kshomer ode eker, then when it says ode eker mishpachat ger, what is eker that he sells himself for to? Zeh nimkar v'naseh misharet lo avodat kochavim atzma. That someone becomes a person who is in service of the avodah zarah itself. And Tosafot says over here, how do you know that Eker is a reference to Avodah Zarah? It's very interesting. He says, the fish is sofan shel avodat kochavim le'aker. Because in the end, that's what's going to happen to all Avodah Zarah. It's going to be uprooted and destroyed. So that's why the term Eker is used to describe to not only work for a non-Jew, that's a ger toshav, not only a non-Jew, that's an Ovei kochavim, but sells himself to work for the Avodah Zarah itself. That's how bad things have gotten. That this person is tumbling and falling. He sins. And so now you have a problem with regards to the sin because the sin is repetitive. And the sin being repetitive changes it from being something that he has pangs of guilt and reticence about to being a heter. That causes economic duress. And the economic duress continues to get worse and worse where he's selling off more and more of his more personal assets, starting with metaltalim, then to his steachuzat, then to his house, and then to his daughter. And then he's borrowing with rebate and selling himself. All the way down, there's this economic downfall of the individual. And then he loses everything because he's not only selling himself in terms of his economic or physical being, but he's also selling out his quote-unquote religious beliefs by now having to sell himself to work for the Avodah Zarah in order to make money or to survive. And so you see this tremendous destruction of the individual, all starting from what they call a small avera of Avka Shel Shvi'it, Nosem Notem Perot Shvi'it, but it continues to compound that problem and brings a tremendous downfall to the individual. Obviously, the idea being that he should become aware and he should take a lekach, a lesson or a musar from it and improve his ways and stop doing what he's doing so that he stops the process or the downfall of the individual. Now, why we brought this up was because you said that an Eved Ivri, we would always go to Kula because an Eved Ivri is like an Adon to his master because he gets all these benefits. He is treated like a king. And so if that's the case, obviously we would treat him to Kula when it comes to redeeming himself. Rav says, well, why don't you follow Rav Yosef Rebbe Chanina? Rav Yosef Rebbe Chanina says that the reason this guy is an Eved Ivri is because he's a wanton violator. That's why he's ending up being an Eved Ivri in the first place. So then maybe we should be machmir on him. The Gemara says about that, no, you wouldn't have thought to do that, Amalei, because Hahadre Kra, the Pasuk brings him back. As the Rabbeinu Gershom says, Shechas Sakatuv Alav Lachar Mikan. Right afterwards, the Pasuk has pity on him, the Kamar Kra, Gula Tielo. That's the next Pasuk. After he solves himself, and Nimkar Leger Toshav Imacho Leikar Mishpachat Ger, says, Achar Nimkar, Gula Tielo Echad Me'achav Yigalenu. Torah says, you've got to redeem it, and he will have redemption. He will be saved. So you see the Torah, despite the fact that this is a result of a wanton violator and someone who's done wrong, nevertheless, the Torah always holds out that hope that gula tielo, that he will be redeemed. And you see the Torah is always trying to be mekil on the individual in order to facilitate their ability to free themselves or relieve themselves of the situation that they are in. V'tana debei Rabbi Shmuel, Oleo v'alach u'machar etzmo l'avadat kochavim, you would have thought to say, as the Tana de Beir Mishal says, this guy who already sold himself to work for Avodah Zarah, you throw the stone after the one who's fallen in, or basically you kick a guy when he's down. Once he's down already, you figure you would just keep kicking him down and let him roll down and not take care of him. The fact that the Torah goes out of his way to say, Tamalomar, Gulat Yelo, Echad Me'achav Yigalenu, the fact that the Torah says that shows you that the Torah doesn't believe that you kick a guy when he's down, but rather when a guy's down, you try to lift him up, and you try to elevate him and bring him back, put him back on his feet. Now, it's important just to note that the circumstances that we're dealing with, both in the case of the Steach Huzah and the Eved Ivri, are circumstances where a person fell in hard times and duress, and that's why he's selling the property. So the Torah wants to give that person who's fallen on hard times and facing these difficulties, the easiest way back to recover from that difficulty or from that economic hardship. And that's why, even without the psukim, you might have thought to say that the better way to go in each of these cases is the kula, not the chumrah, meaning that there's a logical reason why you might have gotten the kula. Not only the fact that the psukim, we darshan that way. And the way we darshan it was by learning from Eved Ivri, whereby we just proved that an Eved Ivri would go the kula, either because you treat him like a king, or because the Torah gives him a geula even after his downfall. And because there we would go to kula, we have a zera shava of geula to stay achuza. And that tells us that by stay achuza, we also go to kula over there. Mara says, Ema geula tielo, dolo ditama ba'oved kochabim. Let us say, wait a minute. The reason we want you to redeem him is so that he doesn't become assimilated amongst the Ovedat Kochavim. He's working for non-Jewish owners. He doesn't have a good chance of practicing Judaism or continuing to be a Jew. He's going to be heavily influenced by his environment. If that's the case, maybe the reason that the Torah says Geulat Yelo is to rescue him from this difficult religious situation. But when it comes to redeeming him, we would still go the Chumrah. So maybe even logically you would say that the redemption is the Chumrah, even though we demand the redemption in order to release him from this difficult position religiously. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok Tiv, the Pasuk says, Im od rabot bishanim, if there are a lot of years left, lefihem yashiv gulato mikesef miknato. Based on that, he returns the amount of money of his purchase price. The Pashtuta Pasuk is that we're speaking about the number of years left until the Yovel. So if there are a lot of years left to the Yovel, then you're going to pay a lot of the purchase price back in order to get this individual or free him. V'ma'at nishar b'shanim, if there are only a small number of years that are left, ad shnat yovel, till the yovel comes, which he's going to be released in, v'chishav lo, k'vishanav, yeshivet gulato. Then you calculate based on the few years that are left, or the residual years, and figure out how much you need to pay in order to redeem the individual. Basically, it's two sides of the same coin, which is the purchase price of the Eved is then spread across the number of years until the Yovel that he's going to be working for this individual. That's the value of each year. And then, based on the number of years, if you have a lot of years left, it's going to cost you a lot to redeem him. If you have a few years left, it's going to be less to redeem him. That's the Pashto de Pasuk. But Rav Nachman Yitzchok explains to us, Imod Rabot B'Shanim, Uktibi Ma'at Nishar B'Shanim, since when are there long years and short years? Because the way the pasuk reads is im odra bot bashanim. If it was true what we were saying or the pashtuta pasuk, it should have just written im odra bot shanim. If there are a lot of years left, or im at nishar shanim. If there are a small number of years left, what is it? Rabot bashanim and maat bashanim. There's a lot in the year and a little in the year. Ella, nitrabe kaspo, mikesev miknato. So it must be that the rabot over here is not referring to the number of years, but rather the purchase price. In nitrabe kaspo, if his market value has exceeded his purchase price, then you pay mikesev miknato. If imat nishar bishanim, im nimat kaspo, if his market price has diminished, kivishanam, then you pay him based on his market price, not based on the original purchase price. So he learns it from the actual psukim themselves, that you go to Kula, because it tells you over here, Rabot and Ma'at, which is a reference to the value of the individual, depending which way the value went, since the purchase price will also determine the benchmark by which we calculate how much you have to pay to free him. Where it says, Ba'ema Echid Avad Tarte Paishe Arye. So let's say that the case where he worked for 2 years, and now there are 4 years left, Leitiv Le Arba Mikesed Miknato. Then he should pay him 4 years from his purchase price. In a case where he worked 4 years and he only has 2 years left, then he'll pay the residual 2 years based on his current market price. So Rashi says that the nature of the Gemara's question here is, how do you know you're talking about a change in the value of the Eved, that there was appreciation or depreciation? And that's what the Pesukim are speaking about. Maybe it's simply speaking about this issue of Giron Kesef. It's just telling you that based on the number of years, the more years that elapsed, or the less years that elapsed. And that's the meaning of the psukim over here. Tosafot does not love that explanation of Rashi, and that's because that's the pashtuta pasuk, and you don't need a yitur, you don't need any extraneous language, which it seems that Rav Nachman Yitzchok is being doresh, in order to come to that conclusion. In addition, the two sides could have been combined into a single pasuk. According to Rashi, it's just the two sides of the possibilities of how much time is left in terms of the Giron Kesef. Why would they be split up into two psukim? And therefore the Baal Tosafot suggests that the question of the Gemara over here is, why don't you say that there are different methods of redemption and calculation of the benchmark depending on where you are in that continuum of the time period in which the Eved Ivri is in servitude? And that is, if the larger or smaller time of his work have elapsed, that will affect which price you use in order to determine what the geula is for the 70 Ivri. And there might be some logic to that, which is that the closer you are to the beginning of his servitude, then the more likely that the purchase price is the market price or the relevant price that should be benchmarked. And later he is in his servitude, then the more likely that the market price should be the governing price rather than the purchase price. So maybe that's what it's saying. Im od rabot bishanim. If he has a lot of years left to his servitude, then we use the purchase price as the mechanism for determining what the price per year is. And if ma'at bishanim, if he's very close to the yovel, then we use the market price rather than the purchase price to determine the last couple of years that he has left, what it would cost to redeem him. Mar says, im kein ichtov im od rabot shanim. Again, without the bet there. If there's rabot shanim, if there are a lot of years, my bashanim, what does it mean? In the year, nitrabek kaspo bashanim. If his value has gone up in the years, mikesev miknato, then you use the purchase price. Nimat kaspo bashanim. If his price over the years has diminished, his market price has gone down, kefi shanav. So that's why the word bashanim is used and not shanim. Because if you wanted to say what you were saying would be, im od rabot shanim, bimaat nishar shanim. The fact that it says bashanim means that something happened over the years. And that is either that his price appreciated or his price depreciated. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yosef, Tashina Rav Nachman Nahani Krai Kisinai. So Rav Yosef compliments Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's explanation of these psukim and the understanding of why by Evid Ivri we go the Kula. He says about that, that he was Doresh, these psukim like Sinai. Sinai means someone who was at Har Sinai, is knowledgeable in Kola Torah Kula, and is being Doreshed as if it was Moshe Rabbeinu being Doresh the psukim. What's interesting about this is that Rav Yosef himself was given that accolade, which is at the end of the Gemara in Brachot, and last off, it says about Rabbah and Rav Yosef, that Rabbah was an Oker Harim, and Rav Yosef was a Sinai. Sinai was that he knew Kol HaTorah Kula, that he knew things from beginning to end. He was what called Mare Chitaya. He had everything. You asked him anything in the Torah, he knew about it. You asked him any question, any piece of information, he could tell you it. Now, he wasn't as sharp, he wasn't able to be Oker Harim like Rabbah, but he had the breadth of knowledge. And so it's interesting here that Rav Yosef gives the compliment of Sinai, which he was known for, to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So I would assume that that was a very high accolade because Rav Yosef was known as a Sinai, is now calling Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak his Sinai, like his Sinai. Now the Gemara says, the Mishnah told us, Loim Kor B'Rachov V'Yigal B'Karov, can't sell fields further away to redeem the closer ones or bad ones to redeem the new ones. Manan Elimile, how do you know this? The Tana Rabbanan, because it says in the Psukim with the Gula of a Steachuzav, Ish Kilo Yelo Goel B'Siga Yado, when he reaches the economic means to redeem himself, umatzak de gedulato, he found his ability to redeem. V'hisiga yado, yadatzmo. That means that he reached it of his own accord. Shelo yilveh v'yigal. He can't borrow the money from someone else and then redeem it because he hasn't reached a better economic standing or position by himself. Umatza, and then he finds gedulato, prat de matzui. That comes to exclude something that was already present or available to him when he made the decision. So that he should not sell something far away and redeem something close. Birah, something bad, and bigol biyafeh. That's because both that option was available to him when he sold the item. When he sold the property that was closer to him, he could have sold the property further away. So now that he already sold the property closer to him, now he can't change his mind in essence and sell the property further away to redeem the property that's closer, because that option was already available. And so that's not a change in his economic status that provides him the ability to do the gula. The same thing with the yafeh and ra. He had the option to sell the ra, and he sold the yafeh. So then now he can't go and change that or reverse that, because he made the decision, and he had the option at the time to make the decision. Kedei gulato, the amount of the redemption. Kedei gulahu goel v'enu goel lechatzin. It has to be the full amount of the redemption, the amount that will release him from the sale. That's kedei gula, the full amount, and not a portion of the amount. Lememra, the matzah hashtamashma. From here, it sounds like matzah means the current state, which is that we just said in the pasuk, matzah kedei gulato, means he now has come to a better economic standing, not something that was matzui in the past. Is that really true? V'aminu. We have a pasuk by a horeg bishogeg, someone who kills another party bishogeg. So it's in the psukim that I brought for you. It says in Dvarim Perkutet pasuk hey, v'sheyavo et reyo bayar, lachtov etzim. Somebody goes into the forest in order to chop trees. V'nitcha yado begarzen, v'kharot ha'etz. He uses the axe, grabs the axe to cut down a tree. V'nashala barzel min ha'etz. And then something went wrong. Mechloket in the Gemara Makot, what exactly went wrong, whether the head of the axe went flying off, or a splinter went flying off the tree from the axe. Then, and, umatza et re'ehu. And unfortunately, it found his friend, umvamet. And then the friend was killed. Hu yanus el achad ha'arim ha'ele v'chai. He runs away to one of the Arim Iklat in order to survive and to live. That's because he killed Bishogeg. He probably should have been more careful. He should have taken more precaution. But he clearly was not intentionally trying to kill. He did not know that the axe was loose or that it would throw off a splinter. And so it was an unintentional murder, a shogeg. That's why he's entitled to run away to the Arei Miklat. And the Gemara darshins about umatza prat lemamtzi atzmo. Matza means he has to be found, not that he brings himself there. Mikan, amar Rabbi Eliezer, imish yatza even mitachet yado, if after the person released the stone, say somebody was throwing a stone, Hotzi Hale et Rosho, the other party walks into the trajectory of the stone, Bikibla, and ends up getting hit by it, Patur, the person who threw the stone, is Patur from going to Galut. He's not Patur the Gamre, he's obviously a Shogeg, but he's a less of a Shogeg, he's not a Shogeg that is subject to being put into an Ir Miklat. Alma, from there you see Matzah, Mide De'ita Me'ikara Mashma, means something that was already present, that pre-existed the situation. That's what it means, U'matzah et Re'eyu. It finds his friend. Whatever this guy did, found his friend that was already present in wherever he was. In the forest, he already was sitting there. He was walking through there. He was already there before the person did whatever he did in chopping the tree down and having the axe released or a piece of the tree released and hit this individual. On the other hand, if the person chopping was there first, and then the other person walks in to the dangerous area or walks into the flying axe, then he's patur. But that means that the word matzah over here means a pre-existing condition or a pre-existing state. Whereas we're saying now that the matzah, by the case of gedulato, means that was something that was matzoi. Matzah means something that is now, in the present, has come about, not something that pre-existed. So Gemara says, that's not a problem. Amarova, hachaminyana dekra. It's all contextual. Each one of them is interpreted based on the context. Hacha dumya de sigayado. In our case here, it says, Ve'siyado umatzah kedei gulato, that he now has the means by which to redeem the property. My siyado de hashto, the means to redeem the property is something new. Had he had the means before, he would never have sold the property. The fact that he has the means now means that something that's happened in the present, af matzah nami hashto. So too, matzah kedei gulato means to be, it has to be something that is new, that he's found now, not something that pre-existed. Ve'ocha dumya deyar. And over there, by the case of the Memit Bishogeg, person who kills Bishogeg, there it's Dumya Diyar, to the forest in which they are found. Mayar Milta Diita Mikara, just like the forest pre-existed the circumstances and the situation that evolves over here, so too, Af Matzah Milta Diita Mikara. So too, the victim has to be something that was present or pre-existed the situation, rather than walking into the situation or bringing himself into the line of danger. It's now the Gemara says, Ubehekdesh, by Hekdesh is just the opposite. Minahane mile. How do we know that's the case? Because Tanur Banan, Im Gaol Igao. It says by the Stei Achuzah, which we've been learning along in Vayikra Perech Chavzayin Pasuk Yutet, Im Gaol Igao Et Asadeh Amakdishoto, Yasaf Chamishit Kesev Erkechala Bekamlo. So it gives you a double Geula, Malameid Shaloveh V'Goel, V'Goel Lechatein. The duplication of the Ga'ol Yigal means in any way possible, we allow you to redeem it. That means that he can borrow in order to redeem it. That means that he can also redeem it in piecemeal. He can do whatever he needs to do in order to redeem it. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Matam, what's the reason over here? The fish matzino b'mocher ste'achuza she'afek kocho. By the case of someone who sells his ste'achuza, he has the upper hand in the situation. She'em igia yovel v'lo nigala. If he is unsuccessful at buying back the field before the Yovel, he's unsuccessful at redeeming it, Choser the Balim B'Yovel. The worst that happens is at the end, he'll get it back in the Yovel. That's the bottom line. The bottom line situation here is if he does nothing or he can't do anything, he's going to get it back in the Yovel. Hora Kocho. Therefore, we diminish his rights with regards to his ability to redeem. That means Sheno Love V'Goel, Veno Goel L'Chatzim. That's why he can't borrow and redeem, and that's why he can't redeem piecemeal. Because in the end, if we don't allow him to do this, and he fails to do it, the worst scenario is that he gets it back in the Yovel. Aval makdish ste'achuza, by makdish ste'achuza, that's not the case. Ho'il shorakocho, he has the worst position here, because she'im, higya Yovel, because if Yovel comes, velo nigala, and he has yet to redeem it, yotzei lakohanim, then it's distributed to the mishmar of the Yovel. So he's going to lose the field entirely if he doesn't redeem it. This might be supportive of that view that we saw in the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rambam in the Mishnah before, that a person, if he redeems the property or buys the property after a third party bought it, then it puts it back into his possession and returns it as a steachuza and is not distributed to the Kohanim in the Yovel. And that's why over here, in lo negala, if he doesn't redeem it. Well, if the Gizvar sells it to a third party, it doesn't matter if he does redeem it, it's not going to do anything according to Rashi. But those who have the Girsa, like the Rabbi Eino Gershon and the Rambam before, that if a third party buys it, and then the Baalim buy it from that third party, it's as if the Baalim bought it originally, then this would make a lot more sense. So there, in that situation, if he doesn't redeem it, the Kohanim are going to be the beneficiaries of the property. Therefore, Yafek Kocho, therefore we increased his abilities and opportunities to redeem the property before that happens, and we say, She, Love, Begoel, he can borrow money and redeem it, Begoel Echatzim, and there's also allowed to then redeem it piecemeal, because anything that he does will prevent it from falling into the hands of the Kohanim and return it to him. And so therefore we give him the opportunity, or as much opportunity as possible, to redeem it, because if he doesn't redeem it, the outcome is not that it's going to return to him, but rather it's going to be distributed to the Kohanim. In the case of Steachuza, where the worst that can happen is that it's going to come back to him in the Ovel, there we don't give him the advantage of redeeming it piecemeal or borrowing and redeeming it. Now, Tani Chada, we have one bright thought that says, Loveh v'goel v'goel l'chatzim, that one is allowed to borrow and redeem piecemeal, v'tanya idach. And we have another bright that says, Eino loveh v'goel v'eino goel l'chatzim, that one is not allowed to borrow and redeem, and not allowed to redeem piecemeal. My answer is, Lokasha Rabbanan by Rabbi Shimon. The difference in the brightot is the authorship. One is authored by the Rabbanan, and one is authored by Rabbi Shimon. Rashi claims that the brightot here is speaking about Makdish Steachuza. Speaking about someone who is Makdish a Steachuza. And so the one that says that you have permission to do this is authored by Rabbi Shimon, who said in the previous bright, as we saw, that since your back-end rights are diminished when you're Makdish Steachuza, because you're not going to get it back in the Ovel, we therefore strengthen your front-end rights, and we allow you to borrow and redeem, or we allow you to redeem piecemeal. And that's Rabbi Shimon, who is Doresh Taima Dekra. Rabbi Shimon is Doresh, the reasoning behind Pesukim. Now everybody's Doresh Taima Dekra. The Rambam and the Ramban, in their commentaries, both note that everybody, not just Rabbi Shimon, is Doresh Taima Dekra. The unique aspect of Rabbi Shimon is that when he's Doresh Taima Dekra, to give normative results, means that he thinks it affects the halacha, the reasoning that he brings to bear over here. So it's not only that we are trying to understand the reason of the mitzvot, when you understand the reason, it also affects the halacha. And that's Rabbi Shimon over here. Rabbi Shimon says, the reason that Hekdesh is different than in the regular case of Steachuza is because of what the results are in the end. And by the Makdish Steachuza, the back end will be that he's going to lose it to the Kohanim. So therefore in the front end, we give him many more rights in order to redeem it. So that is Doresh Taima Dekra. The reason why by a regular Steachuza that you sell, you don't have those rights is because in the worst scenario, you're going to get it back in the Ovel. So we don't need to increase your power or your rights. So if that's the case there, because in the back end, you're going to get it back, in the case of Makdish Steachuza, where you're not going to get it back, then we have to change the dinim to facilitate your ability to redeem it. That's the way that Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot over here, it says, Vomeri, de kai amocher bait barei achoma. The reason that Balei Tosafot don't love Rashi's explanation is because then our Mishnah becomes a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, which would be interesting because generally, if you have a machloket Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon, you would paskin like the Rabbanan. And in general, we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon, we're Dorshin Taima Dekra, to have normative implications. But if you say that we're speaking about a Makdish Steachuza, which is mentioned in our Mishnah, and our Mishnah says you do have permission to do these things, then that would only be according to Rabbi Shimon and not according to the Chachamim, the way Rashi describes the two brightot over here. Therefore, the Bari says that he thinks it's not speaking about a Makdish Steachuza, but rather about a totally different case, which is Batei Arei Choma, that in a walled city, if you sell your house, you have a year to redeem the house. If you don't redeem it within the year, then it's permanently sold to the buyer. So Rabbi Shimon there again says, well, what's the reason by Steachuza that you can't borrow and redeem, and that you can't redeem piecemeal, is because in the end, you're going to get it back in the Ovel. That's not true by Batei Arei Choma. If you don't redeem it, it's not coming back to you. It's going to be a permanent sale. Therefore, since your rights are diminished in the back end, we're going to give you more rights in the front end. I'm going to tell you that you can be bovev and goel, you can borrow and redeem, and that you can redeem the chatzayim. That's Rabbi Shimon's view. The Chachamim say, we're not Doresh Taima Dekra. Just like by Steachuza, you can't do these things. So too, by the case of Mocher Bayit Varei Choma, the same din applies, that you can't do these things. And we don't try to figure out, there's a difference between Batei Arei Choma and Steachuza, based on learning the reasoning of the psukim. And so that's what leads to this machlok between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, Ba'batei Arei Choma, according to the Ri. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph.